Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. It's often been said that the Vermont Constitution was the first state constitution in the country to outlaw slavery. But is this really true? There are a number of people who question the accuracy of this statement, and that's because they believe that the Vermont Constitution, as adopted in 1777, allowed African-American men to be slaves until they turned 21 and women until they turned 18. But not everyone agrees with this interpretation of the Constitution. There is a proposed constitutional amendment this year at the State House which eliminates all references to slavery. The amendment has 24 sponsors, and the lead sponsor is Chittenden County Senator Debbie Ingram, who joins us now. Senator, great to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So I thought just to start off the program, it would be helpful to read this section so that we all have the same starting point. This is Article 1 of the Vermont Constitution. Quote, that all men are born equally free and independent and have certain natural, inherent, and unalienable rights, and therefore no person born in this country or brought from overseas ought to be holden by law to serve any person as a servant, slave, or apprentice after he arrives to the age of 21 years, nor female in like manner after she arrives at the age of 18, unless they are bound by their own consent. Looking at that language, why do you think it's important to change it?
I think that slavery is a morally reprehensible and antiquated institution, and any reference to it at all should be taken out of our Constitution. I can affirm the first part of that article that talks about persons being born equally free and independent and having rights and enjoying liberty and all the other very positive things that it mentions. But the references to slavery do, I think, create a loophole that children are allowed to be slaves. And there's absolutely no reason for us to, in the 21st century, to have this in the Vermont Constitution.
So you look at this language and say, yes, there's a loophole here that it allows child slavery.
Yes, I do. Yes, because it's only prohibited for, as you said, males over the age of 21 and females over the age of 18. So that means that anybody below that age was allowed to be a slave. And there is historical evidence that there were that children did continue to be enslaved in Vermont even past 1777.
And what do you think would adopting this amendment have a practical impact in Vermont? Would it be making a statement?
I think it would be, yes. I mean, we're living in an age where there's a lot of disrespect towards people of color. There's anger and violence and hatred between people of different, not only racial groups, but different kinds of social groups like the LGBTQ community and religious groups. And I think we should do all that we can to make sure that everyone feels included in our state, to make sure that we take out reference to these kinds of institutions that were divisive and that degrade one group of people over another.
As you look at this amendment, you've got, as you said, you've got 24 sponsors on it. So you only need 20 in the Senate. So one would think you're in pretty good shape.
Yes, I think we are definitely. And ultimately, we'd like to have unanimous support. And while there's some haggling over some of the language, I think I do hope ultimately we'll all agree to update the Constitution in this way.
During the course of the program today, we're going to hear from a bunch of different voices on this subject. One is from Steve Perkins, who's the executive director of the Vermont Historical Society. He told me that he feels it's very important to pass this amendment.
We shouldn't rely on the fact that the U.S. Constitution supersedes our own Constitution. I think it's setting the record straight, and I think it's also making a statement today about inclusion and a welcoming state and how we treat all of our citizens.
And for another perspective on this issue, we turn to Tabitha Poor Moore, who is the president of the Rutland chapter of the NAACP. She supports the proposed amendment because she thinks the current language of Article 1 is definitely a loophole that needs to be closed.
For me, it's shocking that we're even talking about it in 2019. This should have been done a long time ago. So I'm glad to see that Senate GovOps are all on the same page in saying that it needs to be removed. Well, currently, as we're seeing in the Trump administration, when you leave things latent and assume that they're harmless and that people are going to interpret them the way any reasonable person would, this whole thing with immigration is showing us that latent and seemingly innocuous laws can be used to hurt a whole lot of people. I don't want that in my Constitution. And I do think that as far as a way to acknowledge what's been done to people of color in this country, Vermont owes it to have this conversation and to take into account probably even more heavily to weigh the opinions and insights of those most impacted by it. And that would be Black people, especially concerning our current climate here in Vermont around race. I think that this would be a good gesture to acknowledge, to say that our government acknowledges the way that these sorts of things land for people of color. And it's not good enough to say, well, we're the first state to ban slavery. We want something behind that.
Senator Ingram, do you have concerns that this loophole could be used in other ways?
Well, I don't think de facto we have to worry probably too much about you know, enslaving or creating some sort of servitude. But I think the message that it communicates is the most important thing. Although, you know, Ms. Polmore's point that there are a lot of other things that we thought we had taken care of in this country that are kind of rearing its ugly head these days. So better safe than sorry, as far as that goes. But I think especially the message that we're communicating is what's most important, and making sure that we make everyone feel welcome and included, and that we own up to the fact that, you know, though we might want to pat ourselves on the back for being the first state to prohibit slavery, it was, even that was done in a limited way, and we need to make it so that it's completely eradicated.
Today in the program, we're looking at a proposed constitutional amendment that would eliminate slavery from the Vermont Constitution. Your thoughts about that? Is that a good idea? Do you have some concerns about it? Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's start with James in Windsor. Hi, James. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking my call. I would encourage legislators not to support proposal number 2. The original intent of Article 1 was to abolish slavery, and I would not say the first state because we were not a state then. What is being called as a loophole with the age requirement, as I understand it, was done to specifically allow the indentured servitude of minors of any race. There were slaves in Vermont. Abolishing this language is an insult to having the fact that we did have slaves here. Many of them were adults, one in Windsor itself, where I live, who was sold at the age of 30. And that happened not because of Article 1 and its wording, but despite it, because some members in the state felt it their right and privilege to own other individuals. I think that our Constitution is unique, and it's something that we should take pride in and celebrate, and let history speak for itself, and let the Constitution stand as it is.
Okay, James, thanks very much for your phone call. You know, as I've done a little research on this, we do find slavery in Vermont in the latter part of the 18th century and the beginning of the 19th century, so that despite Article 1 talking about a prohibition on slavery for men over 21 and women over 18, we still have slavery in Vermont.
That's absolutely true. Yes, that's what I've read as well. And slave owners could get around this by selling slaves to people in other states. There's nothing in this that made them free slaves that they currently owned, and so that continued to happen. And while I think I'm sure there were some people who had very noble intent in writing this, there were people who may have looked more at the pragmatic aspect of it, or who didn't really care that much about the principle, the moral principle of whether people should be owned or not. And you know, our history books will speak for themselves, but anybody who looks at the plain language of this Constitution, this first article, will see that I can't imagine how they would interpret it except to see that there is some slavery that is allowed. And we're not proposing taking out all of the language, but we are that last clause, which talks about, you know, being able to basically own children.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Betsy, who is calling from Bristol. Hey, Betsy, welcome to the program.
Hi. I think that the only possible reason that to have included keeping children might have been to protect underage slaves who had no parents from suddenly being released into the world with no form of supervision or food or whatever. But that would have been an issue a long time ago, now archaic. It's not applicable, and so it's time to delete that reference.
Betsy, thanks very much for your comments today. Let's talk to John in Shelburne. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hello. I wanted to call in and mention, unless I'm mistaken, I think that the federal amendment that abolished slavery still allows for slavery if a person is convicted and incarcerated. And I think we need to, if we're addressing historical slavery, we really should pay respect to existing violations of someone not being justly paid for their labor, and try and move a person away from, like, punishment and more bring it closer to rehabilitation.
And, John, could you elaborate on that a little bit?
If I'm not mistaken, again, I think the federal amendment that abolished slavery also notes that if a person is a convicted prisoner, that they are not subject to the same labor laws that free citizens are, and it's legal to pay them less than minimum wage, and I think that needs to be worked on as well.
Okay. I appreciate your perspective on that. Let's see if we can talk to Terry in Huntington. Hey, Terry, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. The person who was just talking is correct. Amendment 13 to the United States Constitution does allow slavery and involuntary servitude as punishment for crime, which I don't have a particular problem with. What I'm wondering about is why the legislature or anybody would take the time to try to go back to the Vermont Constitution when the entire idea of slavery is moot from Amendment 13. It says slavery, blah, 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 shall neither slavery nor involuntary servitude shall exist within the United States. So unless Vermont's going to get out of the United States, I don't see the point of the whole discussion. Thank you.
Senator Ingram, what about that? If we have the 13th Amendment to the federal Constitution, as Terry points out, why do we need to spend time on this?
Well, the caller's right. The 13th Amendment does actually still allow slavery under certain circumstances. So the federal government has not taken care of it completely. And again, it's about communicating a message to all Vermonters that we do not uphold any sense of slavery, that we want to be a welcoming and inclusive environment. And I think, you know, truly those of us who are white and privileged need to understand this kind of thing from the point of view of people of color and very particularly black people in this instance. A lot of the things that we take for granted or we say are long in the past are things that they have to deal with every day. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to bring this forward is out of a sense of justice and compassion for people who are different from me. And I think it's very important that we do this and that we honor these folks that we have treated very badly in the past.
Today in the program, we're looking at a proposed constitutional amendment that would eliminate slavery from the Vermont Constitution. The amendment has 24 sponsors, and the lead sponsor is Chittenden County Senator Debbie Ingram, who is here with us today. Senator, we did get a tweet from Alex who wants to know how you're going to go about doing this. Article 1 of the Constitution does not mention minors in it. So what are you basically removing a section from the Constitution?
That's right. The proposal is to leave the first clauses in Article 1, which affirm that all persons are born equally free and independent and have rights, and among those are enjoying life and liberty and protecting property and pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety, period. That's where we would end it. And so the clauses at the end that talk about no person born in this country or brought from overseas ought to be held as a slave, all of that other part would be excised from the Constitution.
There's certainly another side to this debate over this proposed constitutional amendment. It comes from Peter Teachout, who is a noted professor of constitutional law at Vermont Law School. Now, he opposes this specific proposal because he says backers of it are totally misreading Article 1. He argues that just because Article 1 outlaws adult slavery doesn't mean that it legalizes child slavery. He says there's absolutely no evidence of this and that it's wrong to infer that it does.
And they said, well, Article 1 represents only a partial prohibition of slavery. And I think what that means is they apparently believe that Article 1 prohibited only adult slavery and not child slavery. Therefore, after adoption, in their view, contracts for the purchase and sale of child slaves continued to be perfectly legal in Vermont. And that simply is not true. Article 1 prohibited slavery generally, not just adult slavery. The framers did not condone child slavery. Nobody thought that child slavery was legitimate after Article 1 was put in the Constitution.
And Professor Teachout goes on to say that Article 1 should be celebrated for its ban on slavery.
If you change Article 1 so it makes no reference to the prohibition on slavery, then you have somehow lost sight of a very important historical landmark. If you amend Article 1 to eliminate any reference to slavery, any reference to the prohibition of slavery, you lose sight of something that was really constitutionally significant and something to be proud of in Vermont's constitutional history.
Senator Ingram, how would you respond to Professor Teachout's concerns?
Well, to his first point, I think that it's too much to ask people to have his legal background and to interpret Article 1 the way that he does with his knowledge about what the framers intended. I think we have to go with the plain meaning of the text, and the plain meaning to, I think, anybody who would read the end of Article 1 is that only slavery for adults was prohibited, which would imply that slavery for children would be acceptable. To his second point, I'm sure that we do have a lot to be proud of in Vermont, and I love Vermont and am very proud of Vermont, and I think we can teach our children and successive generations in our history books what transpired and what people were trying to do in 1777. But that belongs in history books, not in the living document of the Constitution of the state.
Professor Teachout also said he's not opposed to amending Article 1, but he'd like to have it done this way.
The other alternative, it seems to me, is take out the scalpel and cut out the second part, which is what is being proposed. But I think if you do that, you ought to put in a phrase similar to what they've done in Colorado just this past November. And this would be consistent with the framers' view of things. There shall never be in this state either slavery or involuntary servitude.
Senator, what do you think about that option? In addition to cutting out the part that you find objectionable, you put something in that makes a very positive statement.
Well, that sounds quite reasonable to me, actually. It's the first time I've heard it, but I think that may be what our committee, Government Operations, is considering. And, of course, when you propose legislation or an amendment to the Constitution, you lose control of it. It's ceded to our committees. And so I know that they're working hard and taking testimony and considering making changes. So perhaps that will be the proposal they come back with.
And would you be open to that possibility?
I would be, yes.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Mish, who is calling from Northfield. Hi, Mish. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Hello, folks. I'm speaking to you as a pink-skinned life member of the NAACP. And as a Jew, and I have a reason for saying that, because the issue of changing our historical documents is symbolic. It is exactly the same issue as taking down statues that celebrate Confederate war people. It's exactly the same as what happened in Germany, taking down celebratory monuments about the Nazi regime. And I would not be happy if I went to Germany and found that for historical reasons, celebration of Nazis was being tolerated. We are talking about an active measure to symbolize our utter repudiation of racism in all of its forms. And I celebrate what is being done in the legislature. So keep up the good work. And we'll make a statement.
Okay, Mish, thanks for your phone call. Do you see an analogy here with the Confederate statues?
I do, yes. Actually, I was born in the South. I grew up in the state of Georgia. And, you know, every town had the obligatory statue in front of City Hall, you know, celebrating the soldiers. And then, of course, we've seen that in some cities they have, you know, even more elaborate statues. And yes, it's symbolic, but it does get ingrained in your sense of identity and your understanding of history. And it wasn't until I got older and started going to, went to college and used more critical thinking and went to other parts of the country that I started to really understand the depth of what that was symbolizing and how offensive it is. And so, again, that's something that can be put in our, we're never going to abrogate our history. It's always going to be part of our history. But moving those statues to museums, putting something else in those public spaces is very similar to what we're talking about here. Because what we're trying to do is communicate a different message, a message of welcoming and inclusivity instead of the exclusivity and hatred that we communicated before.
Back to our callers, and let's talk to Ross, who is calling from Middlebury. Hi, Ross. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I just want to note that this idea that this is an historical document and should not be changed, I think, is misguided. As far as I know, this is the founding document of the state of Vermont, and it is still the supreme law of the land within Vermont. It is a living document. It is not an historical document. And as such, it should always reflect the current state of Vermont and what should be the supreme law of the land. Thank you.
Okay, Ross, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's turn to Bill in South Burlington. Hi, Bill. What's on your mind today?
Thank you. You know, Vermont is the only state that has had no wage growth in the last 2 years in the country. I'm tired of our lawmakers focusing on the things that are not important. We're talking about slavery, which there's been slavery in Vermont in 200 years. We're talking about plastic bags and abortion rights. Let's talk about cleaning up people's methadone, heroin addictions. Let's talk about some economic growth. This is just ridiculous and folly, and I'm just tired of the symbolic baloney that these people are foisting upon us and not focusing on things that will help all Vermonters. Thank you.
Senator, respond to Bill. Why is this important?
Well, I would say to Bill, first of all, that we are focusing on wage growth and fighting our opioid epidemic. We have to do lots of things all at the same time, and it's important because Vermont is changing, and because we are welcoming in more and more people of color, people from who are immigrants, who are refugees, people who are coming here from other states, people who were born in Vermont, who are different from the 96% white folks that that we have, and we want to make sure that we're expressing what our values really are in Vermont, which is we want all of these folks joining our state, and we want to make Vermont a place where people can feel safe and welcomed and appreciated.
Joining our discussion right now about this proposed constitutional amendment is Mark Hughes, who is the executive director of Justice for All. Mark, thanks for being on the program today.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me back. Such a pleasure.
So, Mark, tell us, why do you think it's important for lawmakers to address this issue?
Well, Bob, I just want to go back to the framing and the premise that we started the conversation with. I think what we were doing is we're kind of pitting the historical significance against that of the desire to remove it for reasons that are obvious. And I think that just a small correction is I think you alluded to the fact that this was slavery of black people, and there's no reference to black people in the document. There's slavery is slavery, and I think it's understandable that you would make that assumption because we're the United States of America. And I think that's what British conversation ought to start is because, of course, we know as a nation that this is where we come from. And I think framing this appropriately or properly, rather, is very, very important because we come from a nation not just of slavery, but of convict leasing, of lynching, of sharecropping and so forth. So there's a contiguous connection to what we call systemic racism, which is the carpenter's hammer up in the toolbox of creating wealth and also manufacturing poverty. So to your point, to the caller's point from Northfield, this is extremely relevant to what it is this caller is concerned about because it is systemic racism that is being used to create poverty that has historically been used to also create wealth. In fact, the legislature made a very loud statement over the last couple of years with the racial disparities in the Criminal and Juvenile Justice System Advisory Panel and the report that came out of that, Act 54 from the Attorney General, as well as the Human Rights Commission Executive Director. And then they also made a really loud noise with Act 9, the Racial Equity Executive Director, where that person has been called in to, quote, mitigate systemic racism throughout our entire government. And now if one were to mitigate systemic racism in our entire government, I think our conversation should probably start with our Constitution, okay?
Okay.
So that's kind of where things start, I believe. I would say that at the top of the conversation here, I don't know how much time we've got, but I did want to just give a quick shout-out to the Vermont Episcopal Diocese, who unanimously supported this work, as well as the Governor's Workforce Equity and Diversity Council, who did so. And I believe the Vermont Democratic Party reaffirmed their support for this in their platform statement. So this has been going on for a while. We've been fighting this fight for a while. We've got to take a look at the foundational documents of this state if we're going to really address systemic racism. Now, I just want to pause right there for a moment, Bob, because there's one other key element that is crucial in this conversation that I don't think we've covered up until now, and that is the rest of the story. It also says, for the payments of debts, damages, fines, costs, and the like. And that carries equal weight in this conversation when you're talking about holding someone as a slave. So it's not just about being under the age of 21. It's also about having these fines. And I don't think it's a leap of logic to understand that, you know, with 60% of the folks who are being held in our prisons in this state, not even having seen a judge yet, in fact, they haven't been to trial, okay, that our prison industrial complex in this state is very much connected to this conversation. In fact, if you start to have a conversation about the Constitution, you have to have a conversation about statutes, rules, institutions, the government, the legislature, the Supreme Court. All of this stuff is connected. So this is a very important conversation for us to be having. I think it's a wonderful debate. But at the end of the day, I think we got to focus on the fact that, folks, we're talking about the Constitution, okay? This is the document everybody takes an oath to. This is a document that our lawmakers look at when they're implementing legislation. This is a document that our legal system looks at to determine the constitutionality of anything that's coming up through those systems.
Mark Hughes is the Executive Director of Justice for All. Mark, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks a lot, Bob. Thanks for having me. And please, folks, go ahead and call 828-2228. Contact the legislature. Get in there and testify. This has been 242 years that this has been in place, and nobody's showing up over there. So I think folks should show up over there and testify and tell folks in the committee what they think about it.
Okay, Mark. Today we're looking at a proposed constitutional amendment that would eliminate slavery from the Vermont Constitution in Article 1. This proposed amendment, has 24 sponsors in the Vermont Senate, and the lead sponsor is Chittenden County Senator Debbie Ingram. She's with us today. Let's talk to Judy in Windsor. Hi, Judy. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob. I should note that I'm the executive director at Historic Windsor, and we are preserving a building where a very important court case played out about slavery in Vermont back in 1802. A woman by the name of Dinah was in the service of Judge Stephen Jacob. And I want to applaud VPR for allowing us to have this dialogue today, commend Senator Ingram and the legislature for taking up the charge on this very important topic. And I think I wasn't aware that this was going on, so I'm new to the topic. But I think Mr. Teachout's recommendations about any wording change should be heeded. The case culminated in a Supreme Court decision that held that Dinah was not a slave, but the case declared declared slavery unconstitutional in Vermont. Many scholars believe that this was the first such declaration in the fledgling United States, and that makes it a really important part of our heritage and the heritage of all of humanity. So while I think we want to send a clear message that slavery should never be allowed, I think we need to find a way to make sure that the history trail within that constitutional document is still understood. And again, thank you so much for bringing up this discussion and getting it out to the public.
Judy, thanks for calling. It was a very interesting case that Judy brings up with a member of the Vermont Supreme Court, Justice Stephen Jacob, if I remember correctly, who had a slave. And when that person was older, basically threw the person out and went to the town of Windsor to get some help because that's what was done at the time. And Windsor said, no, she belongs to Justice Jacob. And in fact, at the Vermont Historical Society today is the bill of sale that Justice Jacob had at that time. So you, as Judy mentioned, this part of the Constitution was used in a very positive way to say that slavery never exists, should never exist in Vermont.
Yes, yes, that is a fascinating story, and I'm very glad that Judy called in and brought that to everyone's attention. I very much enjoyed reading Harvey Armani Whitfield's book, The Problem of Slavery in Early Vermont, in which he chronicles that story of Dinah, and it is fascinating, and kind of shame on Justice Jacob for sort of doing all kinds of manipulations with the law to try to get out of taking care of her. But yes, those are absolutely the kinds of stories that we need to be proud of in Vermont, and then we want to preserve in a museum or in our history books. Absolutely.
We've got a couple of people who have asked, how does the constitutional process work in Vermont? And we can just run through that very quickly, but it is a fairly comprehensive process. There's an amendment now being considered by the Senate Government Operations Committee that Senator Ingram is the lead sponsor of. The committee presumably will vote one way or another, or put it on hold, but there are 24 sponsors on this amendment, so it's probably coming out. It then goes to the Senate floor, where it can be amended on the Senate floor. Then it takes 20 senators to advance it to the House. It goes over to the House. The House is not able to amend that proposal in any shape or form. It needs a majority of votes in the House. We then have to wait for another legislature to be elected. Comes back to the Senate. Again, it cannot be amended in any way, but now it just needs a majority of senators. Goes back to the House. A simple majority is needed then as well. If all that happens, it goes before voters in a statewide vote. So you can see the process would take 3 or 4 years for this all to take place. Joining us right now for our discussion is Vermont historian Howard Coffin. Howard, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob. Nice to be here.
Howard, tell us your thoughts about this proposed constitutional amendment.
Well, first of all, it should be appreciated that the Vermont Constitution, when adopted, was a mighty step forward in the history of human freedom. And it was followed up by a mighty effort in the Civil War, an outsized war effort. And we should be proud of that and the Constitution. And there were good intentions, some good intentions behind limiting the freedoms that it granted to slaves. But that is not to say that it's not time for some new wording in the Constitution. And I think Senator Ingram is on the right track. Absolutely. There does, I think, need to be some reference in an amended Constitution to slavery, because we have to remember that slavery still has a very prominent role in this world. So let's have some wording in there.
So, Howard, how do you react to Professor Teachout's analysis that says that the drafters of the Vermont Constitution essentially would be rolling over in their graves if they thought anybody would interpret Article 1 to legalize child slavery?
Well, I don't think they would. Understanding the current times, if they've kept up with things at all, I don't think they'd have such a reaction. You know, Bob, there is a movement afoot in this country today. Really goes back to Abraham Lincoln's call for a new birth of freedom at Gettysburg, to really make African Americans equals in this country in practical terms. And things that Vermont do are always outsized. People take interest in what Vermont does. They may not always agree with us. And this really is a chance to inject ourselves even more into this effort to bring about equality. A lot of people call it Black Lives Matter, and so let's do it. No, I wouldn't be concerned about the attitudes of the founders. I think they'd be right step in step with us.
Howard, what can you tell us about slavery in the early years of Vermont statehood?
Well, there were some slaves in Vermont, particularly along the Connecticut River Valley. I know there was at least one slave in my hometown of Woodstock. He came about 1797 to a family named Powers. And remarkably, into that Powers family, a few years later, came a man named Hiram Powers. Hiram Powers was born to that family. And, of course, he's the famous sculptor of the Greek slave, which is depicted on the chandeliers in the Vermont house. And the Greek slave became a great symbol of the abolition movement, the anti-slavery movement in America. Quite a paradox there in the family. But, yes, there were some slaves in Vermont. Not a lot, but there was certainly need for legislation. By the way, Bob, in 1855, the Senate adopted a resolution that said in part, born of a resistance to arbitrary power, are Vermont's first breath that of freedom, how could her people be otherwise than haters of slavery? On we go today.
Historian Howard Coffin, many thanks for being on the program today.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
We're almost out of time, but give us a sense. Do you have a sense of the timetable of this proposed amendment being considered in the Government Operations Committee?
I know that they've already taken some testimony on it, and I think their intention is probably to get it out in the next week or two to the Senate floor. So it will be soon.
And just to review your thoughts on this, you feel it's important to make a very clear statement on this issue.
I do. Absolutely. Yes. I think that it's, this our Constitution expresses something about our values, and it's just really time for us to affirm our feeling that slavery as an institution is morally reprehensible and antiquated and has no place in the living document that is our Constitution.
And you're also open to the possibility, as Howard mentioned, Howard Coffin and Professor Teachout, of not only eliminating this section, but perhaps putting something in its place that would be a very positive statement against slavery.
Yes, yes, definitely. I'll take a look at that, and I'm sure my colleagues are considering that, and we'll have discussion, but I'm certainly open to that.
We'll certainly be following this issue in the legislative process. That's our program for today. Senator Debbie Ingram, many thanks for coming over and discussing this issue with us.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
I'd also like to thank everyone else who participated in the program and the discussion today. Steve Perkins, Tabitha Pohl Moore, Peter Teachout, Mark Hughes, and Howard Coffin.